You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Esoteric Christianity and the Mission of Christian Rosenkreuz. This is the last lecture in the Collected Works, Volume 130, translated by Matthew Barton, which is composed of lecture notes, this last one, from St. Gallen on the 19th of December, 1912. Lecture 23 is entitled The Starry Heaven Above Me, The Moral Law Within Me. Spiritual science teaches us that the processes in operation between death and a new birth are connected with conditions prevailing in the cosmos. The soul is subject to a very significant contrast. Changes may take place within us during physical existence, but not in the same sense during the period between death and a new birth. Suppose, for example, between birth and death, we have been related in some way to a human being, or have shared experiences with a friend. And now, after his death, we have learned from him something that was not a common experience between us on the earth. How is a relationship established after death? How can our feelings toward him give expression to sympathy or antipathy? When we ourselves have passed through the gate of death and are followed, later on, by someone with whom we had a certain relationship in physical life, this must necessarily remain unchanged for a long time after death. For after death we cannot add anything new to the old relationship. After passing into the spiritual world, we are still subject to our own individual karma. The time when this karma can be transformed comes only in a new life and can only be adjusted or fully discharged in a new incarnation. An individual among the dead cannot, in spiritual existence, work upon the other dead in such a way as to change their life. But it is possible for someone still living on the earth to have an effect upon one who has passed through death. Take the following case as an example. Two human beings who love one another have different attitudes to spiritual science. One of them loves and the other hates it, and hence there is a spirit of opposition between them. If the human being is able to speak of the freedom of his will, this is because ego consciousness takes far deeper paths than does astral consciousness in the depths of soul. In the depths of soul, therefore, a person often yearns for what, in his conscious life, he hates. How can we be of help to one of the dead? We must be united with him by a spiritual bond. We can help, for example, by quietly reading to him, uniting ourselves with him inwardly and lovingly, taking him with us through a sequence of thoughts, sending ideas and imaginations up to him in the higher worlds. Such services of friendship are always helpful. Reading in this way is of benefit. Although in earthly life the person may have been too indifferent, too easygoing, we can lighten his sufferings even if there was no evidence in his life that he longed for these things. Much blessing is often sent from the physical plane into the spiritual worlds, in spite of the great gulf which separates the life between birth and death from the life between death and a new birth. Many living people will feel that they are intimately connected with the dead. They will also be conscious that they help the dead. The first souls with whom we come into contact after death are those with whom we had already formed close ties on earth, not those who were unknown to us on earth. A direct continuation of earthly life takes place after death. The soul is inside whatever it perceives, fills it through and through. During the period of Kamaloka, man's etheric form expands as far as the orbit of the moon. All human beings occupy the same space. They are not in each other's way, in quotes, during the Kamaloka period. After this period of moon existence, we inhabit the Mercury sphere, then the Venus sphere, then the Sun sphere. There we live within a sphere of higher spirituality, for the astral elements of the moon sphere have been overcome. Life in each of the planetary spheres depends upon the mood and quality of soul acquired during the moon period. The life of those who have developed moral fellow feeling and compassion differs from the life of those who are egoists. The former open themselves to humanity. Above all, we shall be able to form a connection with those with whom we were together in earthly life. The nature of these relationships will depend upon whether we have been a comfort or a source of trouble to others. A person of inferior morality will become a spiritual hermit. A truly moral person, on the contrary, a sociable inhabitant of the Mercury sphere. During the following Venus condition, we expand to the outermost circumference of the Venus sphere. Someone who in earthly life had no religious feelings, who had received into himself nothing of the eternal, the divine, who during the Mercury period had no bonds with other human souls, will become a hermit even during the Venus period. But there too he is a sociable being, if during the Mercury period he was together with other kindred spirits and warm mutual relationships existed between them. Atheists become hermits in the Venus period. Monists are condemned to live in the prison house of their own souls, each one shut off from the other. A hermit has a dull, torpid kind of consciousness from which other human souls are excluded. A sociable being has a bright, clear consciousness which finds its way into the other being. Man ascends higher and higher into the world of the stars, but the more dimly he lives through these regions, the more rapidly he skims through the ages, and therefore returns the more quickly to reincarnation. This applies, for example, to those who were criminals or idiots in their previous existence. On the other hand, the clearer consciousness has been in the world of the stars, the more slowly does the soul return to incarnation. Man must have been fully conscious out in the cosmos if he is to be capable of building and shaping the physical brain of his subsequent life. The condition of existence in which he becomes an inhabitant of the sun sphere sets in about a century after death. During this sun period, it is possible to acquire a certain relationship to all human beings. If a person has consciously received the Christ impulse, the way to all other human beings is open for him. Since the mystery of Golgotha, union can be achieved with the Christ impulse, the supreme spiritual power. But a person who has not received the Christ impulse remains a hermit, even in the sun sphere. When a human being with his aura is revealed to the clairvoyant, during the moon period of existence, a seed or kernel, enclosed in a kind of auric cloud, is perceived within the vast etheric body. This aura is dark and remains so, even during the Mercury period. During the Venus period, one side of the auric cloud lights up. And if, as clairvoyant, we then observe the human being, we perceive that someone who was previously moral and religious is able from that time onward to have real contact with the beings of the higher hierarchies. If he was a good and moral person, he lives in spiritual contact with higher beings during the Venus period. If he was not good, he cannot know or recognize these higher beings, and is thus condemned to the pain of isolation. Before the mystery of Golgotha, in the first epoch of post-Atlantean culture, conditions were such that the throne of Christ was to be seen upon the sun. Those who had been good and moral in their lives found their way to the Christ in the sun sphere. In the age of Zarathustra, the Christ was already on his way to the earth and could not be found on the sun. Since the mystery of Golgotha, Christ has been united with the earth. If on earth people have not received the Christ impulse, they cannot find Christ between death and a new birth either. When a person has become a sun dweller and has taken the Christ impulse into himself, a multitude of facts, known as the Akashic records of the sun, lie open before him. If on earth he had not found Christ, he cannot read the Akashic records on the sun. We can learn to read this great script if on earth we have accepted the mystery of Golgotha with warmth of heart. And then, on the sun, we are able to perceive the deeds of Christ on the sun through the millennia. Existence today is such that we are strong enough to become sun dwellers. Later on, we enter the sphere of Mars, then the spheres of Jupiter and Saturn, and then finally the world of the fixed stars. On the path of return to Earth, the ether body of man shrinks and shrinks in size until it is so tiny that he can incarnate again in a new human embryo. Up to the period of sun existence, we stand under the leadership of Christ. From sun existence onward, we need a leader whose task it is to guide us to the further realms of cosmic space. Lucifer now comes to our side. If we have fallen prey to him on the physical plane, it is bad for us. But if on the earth we have rightly understood the Christ impulse, then we are strong enough on the sun to follow even Lucifer without danger. From then onward he has charge of the inner progress of the soul, just as on this side of the sun Christ has had charge of our ascent. If on the earth we have received the Christ impulse, Christ is the keeper of our soul on the path to the sun. Beyond the periphery of the sun sphere, Lucifer leads us out into the cosmos. Within the periphery of the sun, he is the tempter. If during the sun period we have been armed with the Christ impulse, Christ and Lucifer guide us as brothers. Yet how differently similar words spoken by Christ and by Lucifer are to be understood. As a wonderful guiding light are the words of Christ, quote, "In you lives the spark of the divine, ye are gods," close quote, John 10:34. And then Lucifer's words of temptation, quote, "Ye shall be as gods," close quote, Genesis 3:5. These similar utterances are at the same time in dire opposition. Everything depends upon whether, here on earth, man stands at the side of Christ or at the side of Lucifer. Spiritual science gives us a deep and profound understanding of the world. A certain knowledge must come to us in the physical body. On the earth, we must acquire understanding of Christ and Lucifer through spiritual science. Otherwise, we cannot pass consciously into cosmic space. The time is now beginning on the earth when human beings must know quite consciously whether it is Christ or Lucifer who, after death, whispers these words into the soul. In the life between death and a new birth, we must unfold a true understanding of Christ, in order that we shall not be condemned to sleepwalk through the cosmos. Spiritual science must be an influence, too, in little things. More and more it will become apparent whether or not forces of life have been acquired between death and a new birth. There will be human beings born with dried-up, withered bodies, because their antagonism to spiritual science renders them unable to gather life forces from the cosmos. Understanding of spiritual science is necessary for the sake of Earth evolution itself. If people have opened their souls to the science of the Spirit, the knowledge that before this life they were in a spiritual world will bring them happiness. Quote, "The starry heavens above me, the moral law within me," close quote. This realization alone gives the world its greatness. Man says to himself, quote, "In the world of the stars I received the essence and content of my inner life. What I lived through in the cosmic expanse flashes up now within my soul. The existence of evil impulses in my soul is due to the fact that during my sojourn in the world of the stars, I did not try to receive its forces or the spirit power of Christ." Close quote. We have, indeed, yet to learn how to achieve union with the macrocosm. Today the human being can have only a dim premonition of what happens between death and a new birth. He feels, "In earthly existence I live within my soul, and bear in my spirit the forces of the starry heavens." If we meditate deeply on this concept, it will become a great and mighty power within us. That is the end of Lecture 23 and the end of the book, Collected Works, Volume 130, entitled Esoteric Christianity and the Mission of Christian Rosenkreuz, 23 lectures by Rudolf Steiner, translated by Matthew Barton.